You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 18th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live and just for the ladies with no pie charts or graphs, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal. Man.
Yeah, Renee Elmers. It was spoken by a woman. That just twists the knife for me. This is what people have told me all along, you know? You ladies will never get equality. There's too many traitors in your ranks, right? She was speaking at a messaging meeting. Republicans need to learn how to message better to women by bringing the policy talk down to their level.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you do these pie charts with the trillions of dollars, and it just, you know, that's not really talking down to a woman's level. Now, we had a discussion about this on one email thread with some knowledgeable women who really wanted, as liberals, as good liberals, to give her the benefit of the doubt and say, look, it is important with certain categories of women voters, particularly women who are working mothers, to make your arguments regarding policy practical. And it's very easy to do that when you're talking about healthcare. The problem is liberals have all the advantages in this conversation.
Exactly.
When you're talking about practical help for working people, the Democrats have all the advantages because the Republican Party has kicked all of those advantages away.
Right.
So by lying us into war, number one. Okay.
Yeah. Let's start there.
But anyway, we really wanted to give her, the woman that I was talking with about this said, I really want to give her the benefit of the doubt on this. And then I heard the tape of her talking. Yeah. And I can't give her the benefit of the doubt. She was clearly playing the Pollyanna Southern Belle. You man know your big words and we, you know, we just need your help.
That's right.
North Carolina, you know, that's what gets some women where they want to be.
And oh, lordy, lordy.
They're willing to kick their sisters in the rear in order to get ahead. And that's what was going on there. So
I gave up benefit of the doubt for Lent a few years ago. And I haven't missed
it. And never walked back?
I never missed it. Frankly, I never missed it.
Well, Drift Glass, I want to stop for a moment and have a sober moment with everyone. Because, damn it, this has been a really rough week.
Yep.
And I woke up this morning really not wanting to podcast and had to. We are recording this at 1 p.m, which is extraordinarily late for us on a Friday to start a podcast. The children immigrants is still out there and no solution in sight.
Refugees.
Refugees, absolutely.
Except for pouring more vitriol on them and accusing them of being plague-bearing Al-Qaeda terrorists in drag.
Now we have a full-blown ground war in the Middle East. And terrorism in the skies. Malaysian flights, Flight 17. Our hearts are with the families of the people on that commercial airline that was blown out of the sky over Ukraine. And so I've been thinking about it, and there's something in common with all of these things that are going on, not just the fact that it's rough and painful and sometimes just hard to turn on the news. The thing that unites all of this is the belief that as a group of people, you can shit on another group of people and it's perfectly okay. It's acceptable because they're not you and they're not in your tribe and they are victimizing you. So you have to victimize them back and you have your stuff. And so they can't get your stuff.
They want your stuff.
Whether it is children from Central America, Palestinians, or just someone wanting to flex their muscles and show that they have anti-aircraft missiles to prove their nationality, whatever that is, whether they're pro-Russian or whatever. I mean, there's some evidence that these guys are pro-Putin in
Yeah, bankrolled, backed, whatever it is. That's why you have an investigation. But it's pretty clear. Two things are pretty clear. It's pretty clear that the United States knows exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Because we have surveillance. We have satellites. Mm-hmm. We have all kinds of shit that's been focused on this part of the world for a year now or mm-hmm. longer. Mm-hmm. And there's also intercepts. There's also messages. So it's very clear that somebody got a hold of or was given a fairly advanced piece of anti-aircraft equipment that requires some knowledge of how to work it. It's not a rifle you're firing. This is a piece of Soviet-era technology that will take down a plane up to 70,000 feet in the air fired it. And it's pretty clear that it was the rebels, the Putin-backed, Putin-funded, or Putin-approved of rebels who were trying to make enough trouble in Ukraine so that he can sweep in there and take the country back on behalf mm-hmm. of Mother Russia. Mm-hmm. And
I do want to go to this higher, more spiritual
point, which is
one group of people having the right to shit on another.
Yeah.
Because they're not us.
Yeah, they're not us.
And all of us are guilty of that in one way or another, including me. And so my meditation this morning as we're getting ready for this podcast is a line from a poem. It was written by Mary Baker Eddy in the 19th century, but this line, love more for every hate. And that is my meditation and my prayer for this weekend is love more for every hate, love more for every hate. Because I'm in control of my own thoughts. That's a place where I can start. Now, that doesn't mean it's a place where I'm going to stop because I see a lot of people reaching out. You've said to me several times this week, You know, it's a good thing we don't live in a border town because our basement would be full of Honduran kids.
And yes, they would.
Yes, it would. Absolutely. And I'm sure our church will be looking at ways to help in a humanitarian way. So there's that. But I need to get my thoughts straight as well. And so when, through the course of this particular podcast, I talk about Republicans, and we're going to talk about Republicans, and we're going to talk about politics and so forth. I want to make sure that I'm focused on elected officials, first of all, who ask to be criticized for what they say.
Yes.
People who stand up with signs, who are obviously trying to influence or engage in a dialogue, perhaps, and they don't know how to spell citizen.
Yeah. What that word means.
Yeah. Or what that word means. Yeah. Or immigrant. You know, they don't know what illegal means because.
Or Christian, for that matter.
Or Christian. And that's certainly part of it. I like this love more for every hate because it is not decidedly Christian. And we have listeners that are atheists. We have listeners that are non-believers and believers and Catholic and Jew and all kinds of variety of groups of people that listen to this podcast. And love more for every hate, I hope, is a universal message that all of us can use to think about these things. So that doesn't mean we don't battle dishonesty or hatred or, criminality in our public officials and lying. And I'm not going to sit here and be nice to everybody because I want to love more for every hate. We can call out dishonesty and evil, but I am not going to blanket hate people for identifying as one party or another in this podcast anyway.
Well, and I, first of all, anger and hatred, mm-hmm. I'll go with hatred, is a resource hog, is a mental resource hog. It sucks up all your CPU. That ends up being the mm-hmm. thing you serve.
Yep.
But by the same token, I am not a believer in pouring out love and acceptance like maple syrup over everything.
No, that doesn't fix anything.
Because if one thing has defined my writing and podcasting for the last going on 10 years, is that mm-hmm. right?
That's right.
Is that both sides don't.
That's correct.
Both sides really don't. And
they really don't.
People who are in the business, who have set up a lemonade stand on top of hatred and are in the business of selling hate, in the business of immediately going to the center of every issue and finding something they can use to fuck you.
Yep.
Those people are people who need to be called out by name, identified individually. And all the people who enable them, all the people who put them on the air, all the people that elect them, all the people that applaud them, those are the people who need to be called out publicly and shamed although they're not capable of shame, but eventually sequestered.
Yeah.
They can't be allowed to participate in our public conversation anymore. Right now.
Well, and you do something that I don't do and I admire you for doing, which is you actually turn on Fox News and listen to it. And you did that last night, and I have to say I was agog. I was absolutely stymied to hear Sean Hannity find a way to blame rebels from Ukraine blowing up a commercial airliner on Barack Obama.
Yeah, yep.
And just blandly decide that this has to be his fault.
And the bodies haven't
been recovered yet.
Right.
And he's turning it into a political.
Mark Kirk, a senator from our state. The failure of this administration's foreign policy failures. For example, this airline being shot out of the sky.
Wow.
And it is so automatic. This is where.
I do find it interesting, though, that Mark Kirk voted in favor of the Hobby Lobby fix this week. So he's evil, but he's not stupid. He doesn't want. Constraining women's rights. The Illinois Republican Party is terrified of women voters.
Was that Mark Kirk? I don't think it was Mark Kirk.
No, it was Mark Kirk. I know I said it was. I told you last night it was our congressman. It wasn't. Uh-huh. It was in the Senate because I got an email from Planned Parenthood saying, thank both your senators, both Illinois senators voted to fix.
Very good.
And, you know, you would expect that from our other senator. He's a Democrat. But the fact that Mark Kirk also voted with women over this Hobby Lobby thing when it came down to a vote, even though it didn't get 60 votes, Driftglass, so it's dead in the water, but so much for democracy.
The thing that happens, and the thing that there's this line from Star Trek, The Next Generation, everybody take a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Chief O'Brien is talking at a bar, is talking to a Cardassian. After the war is over, and they're helping hunt down a Starfleet officer who's gone rogue. They're talking about their days as veterans of the same war, and that Chief O'Brien had never killed anything, and he was suddenly in the middle of this massacre, and he had to shoot an enemy, and he didn't want to do that. And I know I've used this analogy before, and the Cardassian mm-hmm. Is saying, you know, that was a terrible mistake. We thought it was a military base. We didn't know. But it was these two very reluctant veterans of the opposite side of the same conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting at a bar, sort of trying to not kill each other.
Yeah.
And O'Brien says something like, you know, I don't hate you, Cardassian. I hate what you made me do. I hate what you turned me into.
Yeah.
What I truly do hate about living in this country and living under the shadow of the Newt Gingrich, Rush Limbaugh politics that the Republican Party invented and has deployed and won't stop using is the fact that the minute I heard an airline had been shot down in Ukraine, part of me was, oh my God, isn't that a fucking tragedy? Isn't that a fuse? I don't know.
Hear that there were AIDS activists on the plane, and it's just tragic. Number one reaction
is exactly what it should be. Yep. This is a tragedy. It is an unmitigated disaster. It's going to lead somewhere. And the second thing that occurred to me was, okay, start the countdown clock.
Yeah.
How long will it take for John McCain and Rush Limbaugh and the rest of the right to start hanging their I Hate Barack Obama Christmas ornaments on mm-hmm. this tragedy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Took them about 10 minutes.
Yeah. Because they ripped it off the wire service and wrote, how do we make this against Obama?
Yeah.
On, you know, they just have a rubber stamp that goes on top of that.
And to have turned yourself into the kind of creature that seeks out any tragedy anywhere on earth
mm-hmm.
to turn it to your political advantage immediately is, I don't even know how to relate to these people anymore mm-hmm. as humans
mm-hmm.
because it's so awful. What their souls have turned into is so ugly
mm-hmm.
and so unforgivable and mm-hmm. unredeemable.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you and I were joking the other day when we were talking about pregame is I can just see at some future editions, some future episode of Meet the Press, David Gregory saying, okay, so the Antichrist has been cited. How will that play in the 2014 re-election? It is such a – every awful thing, every real human tragedy, everything that we should be talking about as a matter of human reaction and public policy
mm-hmm.
gets shoved through the both sides meat grinder.
Yeah.
How will this play in the election, do you suppose? Chuck Todd, tell us, what do you think about the comet that's screaming towards the Earth, probably going to kill us all? How do you think that's going to affect Hillary's chances in 2016? And it just is like, what the hell happened to you people? Where the hell did your humanity go? And it's so automatic. It's so reflex that everything that happens is responded to by, first of all, let's find a way to blame Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find a way to kick a liberal, find a hippie to punch. Secondly, that the enablers of these people are always about, well, how will both sides react to this? And we're going to get to that in a little bit. But, you know, the Sunday shows, Meet the Press was awful. It was awful. Yeah. And it was about Obama being sued, for example.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
David Gregory's question was, well, this is now being turned into a fundraising opportunity by both sides. Reaction, Kimberly Strassel. And it's exhausting that there is no recourse. There's no way to reach these people. There's no way to ask them why they do this. I have a pretty good idea why they do this, but that's what's so enervating. That's what I mean about what they've turned us into. I don't want to be having this conversation. I don't want to be having this discussion. I don't want to be pulling my hair out, what little's left of it, wondering how the hell can I get someone in our national media to stop playing this game. Where do I sink the crowbar to pry loose some humanity from these monsters?
Yep.
And I at some point just say, there is no place.
Yeah.
They're gone. They have left my species behind, and now they've become this entirely other thing, this thing that lives in a bubble, that doesn't give a shit about anybody in this country, but who doesn't live inside the New York, D.C. universe. And every tragedy on Earth is just an opportunity for a ratings grab to get John McCain back on the air because, yeah. You know, as Brother because Charlie Pierce said,
let the eagle soar, Driftglass.
Well, as Charlie Pierce said, if John McCain is cut off in traffic, his first call is to Andrea Mitchell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's that relentless.
It's that insular, too. It's clubby.
And at some point, there's an interface between them and the real world where they have to know how incredibly destructive and insulting it is that they keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And they obviously just don't care.
Yeah.
So that's the part. I'm looking for that moment where you can ask Andrea Mitchell a question. Why do you keep putting these sociopaths on television? And we know what the answer is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, well, you know, money.
Well, and I'm reading a novel right now that is wonderful. It's called Wolf Hall. I'm really loving it. It's called Wolf Hall by Hilary Mantel. And it's from a couple years ago, but it's about King Henry VIII and his desire to divorce his wife Catherine and marry Anne, which was wife number two of, you know, he kept going. But one of the reasons this novel reached such acclaim is it's not about Henry VIII and it's not about that. It's about the Iraq War and it's about politics and religion. And it goes on and on and on. And there's so many parallels to today in this book that are very clear. And what the part that I'm reading now is about the church in England. There's two things going on. One is King Henry is trying to figure out how to get rid of his wife, Catherine, and marry Anne and still have the church's blessing. He's still trying to do that. In the meantime, the church is burning heretics, literally burning heretics at the stake for reading the Bible in English.
Yep.
And Tyndale's Bible is being found and searched out through houses all over England. And if you found with an English copy of scripture in your house, you are burned at the stake.
It was the Quran of that era, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so here is this dichotomy of, you know, on the one hand, people wanting to read the gospel in their own language and risking their lives to do so. And Henry just wanting what he wants, which is this other woman instead of his wife.
Right.
And being under pressure to produce an heir and all of that. And nothing changes in England until the power finds it convenient.
Yes.
And then it's okay to read the scripture in English and we're not going to burn them as heretics anymore because I'm going to be the church, the king says. You know, I'm going to be the church now and I can do whatever I want because I'm the king. It goes back to Mel Brooks again. Everything goes back to Mel Brooks.
Or Monty Python.
It's good to be the king. The king doesn't have shit all over him, right? But that seems to be how Washington, D.C. is. that unless it inconveniences them specifically.
Yes, very specifically.
Very specifically. You know, is it going to affect the party circuit in Georgetown? Then they'll do something about it. Mm-hmm. If we have to make it really inconvenient for them to not increase the minimum wage, we have to make it really inconvenient for them not to pay attention to women's health issues. And this is what's happening in Kansas right now. It's really inconvenient for Kansans to the point that a great many Republicans in the state of Kansas have endorsed the Democratic candidate for governor. Did you see that? There was a full-page ad in one of the Kansas newspapers. Yeah. We are all endorsing this person.
Yeah, we've had it. We're done.
Because we can't go on. Reality has caught up with us.
Uh-huh. As it inevitably will. And the whole idea is, I want to cash out, get my ranch in Montana, or die before reality catches up with me.
But too late.
Oh, sorry. I guess you miscalculated. Yeah, the global economy melted down before George Bush could leave office. So there's a glitch in the matrix.
I don't know if you saw in our local paper today about Rauner, who is the Republican candidate for governor of Illinois. He's got a whole new tax plan that involves tax cuts for rich people.
Yeah.
We're going to make up for it with a sales tax.
That's nice. That's good, because that would be more fair.
No.
No.
It would not be fair.
It would be the opposite. What's the opposite of fair? Oh, that's right. Yeah. Regressive, I believe, is the word you're looking
regressive,
for.
Regressive.
Yeah.
Terribly, terribly regressive. All right. Yeah. We're getting off of script here, but love more for every hate. A shout out to everyone at Netroots Nation. Congratulations to Andy Cobb, our friend Andy.
Yeah.
Andy Cobb is a filmmaker and comedian and great, great guy. We met him at Netroots Nation a few years ago.
We did.
He got married this week, and I said, I got to look up his wife's name, and you said, it's Mrs. Andy Cobb.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. You see, we're working on a theme. It's for the ladies.
That's right. It's here. I'll loan you my name.
His new wife's name is Mary Beth, and she was a beautiful bride. She's a lovely person, and beautiful, beautiful pictures on Facebook of their wedding, and they're not at Netroots Nation this weekend either.
No.
But I do hope they're enjoying married life and wish them every happiness.
Well, and for this podcast, you know, we're not at Netroots Nation because we just couldn't budget it this year.
Yeah, right.
This year. But I will take a lesson from them, which is they are having the annual conclave of liberals also in the shadow of what's happening in Gaza and in immigration. Mm-hmm,
And in Detroit, specifically. Yep.
And in Detroit, where the water has been shut off for thousands of people. And they are not proceeding as if nothing is happening, but they're persisting in their insistence that politicians and media pay attention to liberal issues.
Yep, right.
That come hell or high water. We're going to keep talking about the minimum wage, or we're going to keep talking about immigration. Or we're going to keep talking about fighting back against people who want to let Wall Street run wild. And
we did listen to Elizabeth Warren's speech this morning.
We did.
Thank God for streaming.
We listened to Joe Biden's literally. he's very sincere, literally sincere, Joe Biden is. And it was a rambling Joe Biden speech. And I agree again with Charlie Pierce, who's actually on site there, that Joe Biden has one thing that a lot of politicians don't have. He loves this shit.
Yes, he does.
He loves getting up in front of an audience and talking about whatever the hell's on his mind. He loves
meeting people and kissing babies and calling grandmothers a beautiful lady. Oh, you must be 39. Yeah.
But he was a little bit delayed because, you know, there was a
great... because he's Biden.
Because there was, as they were streaming the sort of on hold thing, they were playing as their elevator music, Kenny G from the 90s. And I said, no, nothing quite says white liberal privilege.
Yeah,
there you go. Waiting for the vice president to come online, playing Kenny G. And it's
I want to hear Careless Whisper after this, okay?
Oh, white folks on hold. Yeah, yeah. So.
Well, hey, speaking of non-white folks.
Yeah.
We want to welcome Jose Diaz-Balart. I hope I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
To the MSNBC lineup when we turned it on Tuesday morning. I don't know why we didn't have it on Monday morning, but we turned it on Tuesday morning, and there he is, and he has his own show. And I said, oh, my God, has he replaced Chuck Todd? And you said, oh, this will be better because it has 100% less Chuck Todd.
That's right.
But it turns out he's after Chuck Todd.
Yeah.
He's on after Chuck Todd's Guess That Soup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Martin Bashir. Hello, Jose Diaz-Balart.
Yeah, right. But for the most part, Jose Diaz-Balart is doing an awesome job. He did have this anti-choice nut job on the second day, but we're gonna give him some rookie time to get things right.
Yeah.
He's my work husband, by the way.
Yeah.
Bass, gotta warn you. Yeah. I have a Latin lover.
That's okay. That's okay. At least they didn't go with Esteban Colberto, which I thought was...
No, they did not go with Esteban Colberto.
Which is very cool. By the way, I also, as long as we're talking about MSNBC, I do want to get a plug for Chris Hayes is not quite yet gray at the temples enough to get away with, we're all in tonight. It just sounds a little bit like the suit. Your suit is a little too big for you. Although, if he really wanted to go there, I would suggest changing the name of the show to Balls Deep.
Oh, Lord.
Balls Deep with Chris Hayes. Because that's what he's trying to say.
Takes
we're
me an extra 5 minutes to get off my bike when I bike to work from Brooklyn because we're balls deep.
Because, you know, I enjoy Mr. Hayes' reporting. I really liked it when he was on Saturday mornings. I mean, there was a reason for me to get up early on Saturday. It was a master class in policy, humor, and liberal sensibilities. And that it just isn't there anymore.
And it was a community on Twitter.
It
really was that.
It was a mediated conversation where you were sort of at eye level with people. There was no sense that these people were beyond your ability to communicate with, that there was no interaction between them and their audience. It was like a blog. It really was. There were commentary and there was feedback and so forth. And that's just gone now.
We're on to All In.
Okay. All In.
And his tonight. New opening is really kind of a little too intense for his personality.
It's, you know, I appreciate what he does. I'm glad he's there. I just think it sounds a little bit high. I'm Chris Hayes and we're all in tonight. You know,
but we do love him.
We do.
All right.
It just sounds like someone should be pouring his cereal for him.
As opposed to David Gregory. No, it's not. That's not true.
No, it's not.
Good Morning New Jersey is much more, has much, many more pour your cereal types.
It does. It does.
Really. But that is now what we call Up with Steve Kornacki is Good Morning New Jersey.
Which we don't really watch much anymore. No. Every now and then we'll just flip it on to see. Why, look, it's someone else from the New Jersey City Council talking about Bridgegate. And we get that's your thing. And, you know, this is your science fiction university. But really, I do science fiction university for 10 minutes out of every podcast. I don't do 2 hours of it twice a week. I could.
But you know what? Maybe what we should do is start our Saturday mornings with a big bottle of liquor. And every time Steve Kornacki says New Jersey, we take a drink.
That would be good. And by Saturday afternoon, we would be passed out on the lawn. Speaking of passed out on the lawn.
David Gregory. He's in third place.
He is.
Forever.
Persistently in third place now.
And they can't fire him because they spent too much money on him.
And so what he's decided to do, rather than just swap him out for major international sporting events, which was a brilliant idea while that lasted.
Yeah.
Again, David Gregory's been preempted this week for exciting highlight action. That didn't work out, apparently. So David Gregory has decided, he sat down with his psychiatrist and his family and his consultants and his fluffers and his whatever else he's got going.
Decided, he's paid for by the network in his contract, including his family. Yeah. We need input from his family. That's going to cost you $10,000.
Everything you do is great, honey.
$10,000.
Awesome. And what he has decided to do is be even more David Gregory.
Yeah.
Because that's what the audience is hungering for. So as I mentioned a few minutes ago when I wandered down a side road, the Sunday morning shows really are just not worth watching at all anymore. Mm-hmm. I do still watch them, although I now have a regular Sunday gig, which is called church. Mm-hmm. So I pick up whatever's left and I watch.
I don't make you go to church.
No, I go because I have to.
They'll talk about you if you don't.
They will. And I'm involved. I'm involved in that community. I'm involved. I enjoy them.
That really is it. It is community activism. Our church is community activism. So that's, you can take that and say I'm a heathen for saying that, but. Right.
And
that's what we're doing there. Yeah.
And if it weren't that way, I would not be there. Mm-hmm. And I'm not evangelizing anybody. No, I'm saying this is a cool thing that we do.
Yeah. Yeah. To make the world a better place. That's our job.
So I read the transcripts and people send them along. I usually get a Crooks and Liars transcript, which is always awesome. And I look over for stuff, but it still is what it always was, which is this is the place where people launch their trial balloons. This is the place where you get the talking points distributed for the week. Mm-hmm. And it really is the place where actual debate goes to die. Because there is, as I said before, there's nothing in the world that won't be fed through the both sides do it meat grinder. And since both sides, since it is a simple, established, unimpeachable fact that both sides don't, one side is really, really a lot worse than the other. The Republican Party, the GOP, the conservative movement in this country is in every measurable way the sucking chest wound of politics. And Democrats are the broken arm. It's painful. It's bad. It's fractured in five places. It's weak. It requires a lot of work. But it is an entirely different matter than a gaping hole in your chest. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, well, they're both wounds, so they're both are basically the same thing, is as I've said before, the big lie that keeps every little lie together. And every time, without exception, including this week, when I've had an exchange with a conservative person or a centrist and have flicked away their silly, whatever the conspiracy theory of the week is, it always comes back to, well, yeah, but Nancy Pelosi's just as bad. Liberals, it is absolutely their escape route from being held accountable for the lies that they believe and they propagate every fucking day of their lives.
And I read Driftglass a beautiful example of that this morning.
Oh yeah, you did. You want to share that? Yeah.
Yeah, it was from back in May on Daily Kos. And again, shout out to all those Netroots Nations attenders. We love you and we miss you. This guy who was a logger and had been uninsured since 2009 and was conservative.
Not a blogger.
Just a logger. And he had a liberal friend, and they were named in this article, who kept insisting, no, you should really get insurance, and it's worth it. And you go on this website, and you can get health insurance, and it's a good idea for you to do that. And the guy kept saying, no, it sounds too good to be true. It's Obama. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to get covered. I'm not interested in handouts, and so on and so forth. And the friend apparently kept pushing him. No, you really should do this. And then one day he found out there's something wrong with one of his aortic valves. Conservative guy did. Mm-hmm. Liberal friend said, come over to my house. We're going to sign you up. Let's get you health insurance. And, you know, because of Affordable Care Act, his aortic valve was not a pre-existing condition that prevented him from getting any insurance to get it fixed. Hello.
Yeah, but it turned out he did have a pre-existing condition, but that's coming later.
He did have a pre-existing condition. Yes, I'll get to that.
Uh-huh.
So he got insurance for a very low amount of money. And the next day he heard from his insurance company that, yes, you'll be covered as of this date, and he could go see a doctor and he could get surgery to save his life. And this is just awesome. And he told his friend, this is just awesome. I'm really glad I did this. Now, do you think he said, Driftglass, that liberals were right all along?
Wait for it. Sure, because that is clearly and self-evidently what is true.
Thank goodness the Democratic Party fought for this and didn't repeal it the way the Republican Party wanted to.
Obviously, that is what,
is that what he
would
said?
Say if you were not crazy in the head. Yes. With the facts staring you in the face, that's what a reasonable,
that's what a reasonable person would say was, thank God I was proven wrong.
Save my life.
Save my life. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness someone took the keys away from me and I was my designated healthcare driver because I was too drunk on Rush Limbaugh to think rationally, to operate a vehicle like a voting booth. Yeah.
No, that's not what he said.
No? What did you say?
Said, the problem is that both parties in Washington want to fight over this stuff instead of helping people.
Yeah. And at that moment.
And scene.
See, at that moment. He lays back thrashing on a table, and bursting out of his chest comes David Gregory.
Oh, that'd make a good Photoshop.
Because that's what's there. I mean, this is the absolutely fucking positively the fallback, retreat, ultimate line of defense. Mm-hmm. The Helm's Deep of conservatism.
Yep. The balls deep in this.
Balls deep.
Balls deep in our centrism.
Balls deep and Helm's Deep.
Yeah.
Is... Oh, well, both sides. Both sides do. And that is the gigantic lie to which David Gregory and David Brooks and Tom Friedman and all the rest of our centrist friends who are never going to be out of work, internet billionaires believe this lie, the no labels people believe this lie, all the people who are so...
Well, and elected officials, this is where we need to get back to this.
Yep.
On The Daily Show.
Uh-huh.
Marco.
Rubio.
Oh.
Yeah.
How many times did he say both sides of the aisle, both sides of the aisle? When Jon Stewart was just trying to say, what is the responsibility of your party to do good in America? Yeah. Well, both sides. You know, we have to work with both sides of the aisle.
Uh-huh.
No, you don't work with both sides of the aisle. You've blocked everything. You're a U.S. senator in the Republican Party. Your leader has filibustered his own bills to stop things from happening. Nope.
And so we come up to... And so we swing back around to the Sunday shows where David Gregory, this last Sunday, very reliably did exactly what his paymasters pay him to do. So when it came to the subject of John Boehner suing the president of the United States, which we'll talk about in just a minute, his response was, but this is now becoming a huge fundraising opportunity on both sides, Kim Strassel. To what end are we seeing all of this? David Gregory on the subject of the Affordable Care Act, the lawsuit. He asked Jennifer Granholm this question. If a Republican president were taking these steps on the Affordable Care Act, Democrats would be crying foul. You know, like if a Republican president were exercising executive authority to expand the law, obviously Democrats would be doing exactly the same thing the Republicans are doing and crying foul and suing the president because, you know, both sides. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Granholm, fortunately, reminded David Gregory, who is a congenital and well-paid liar, that except George Bush took these very steps when he passed Medicare Part D and took some time to implement them, and nobody raised this shit. She, in fact, referred to this as complete hogwash, which is why Jennifer Granholm will never have a job on NBC.
Yes.
And then came Rick Santorum talking about the middle class and how much the Republican Party loves the middle class and isn't it a shame, et cetera, et cetera. And David Gregory helpfully punctuates his bullshit with, yeah, the Obama economy. One of the issues, too, is the president's leadership. Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, he swings into action. Well, he swings into action, if you're okay. He swings into action one more time and says, in less than a minute here, even Democrats have said this is a Katrina moment for President Obama.
And they're talking about that one Democrat in Texas.
Yeah, the one Democrat in Texas, Bush's favorite Democrat
in the George Bush administration for a time.
Yeah.
And what do we call him?
Lieberman.
Jose Lieberman.
Yeah, Jose Lieberman. Yeah. Yeah, good old Jose Lieberman.
He really is. He's from Texas. He existed as a Democrat.
He exists so we can point to him and say both sides. And again, I'm old enough to remember.
Republicans can pass a crazy immigration. They won't pass anything, but they can espouse crazy immigration things, and it comes out both sides.
Yeah.
Plus, he's Hispanic, so you know.
And well, yeah, you know what?
Hispanic Democrats are in favor of our side of things, and this guy is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Well, and this is getting back to the woman who said you got to talk down to women.
Yeah.
Or Michael Steele talking about what a travesty it is that the discrimination against Black Republicans is so underreported in America. And Andrew Sullivan building an entire career out of being the gay Republican, the gay conservative. There's always one who's willing to sell out everyone else to make a profit, to become powerful, to become prominent, to be hugged by the president of the United States. There's always one. And your media will find that one outlier freak of a Democrat.
And have him on constantly.
Have him on every fucking day. He is their Alan Cole.
This year it's Henry Cuellar.
Cuellar. Uh-huh. And he's the
Democrat,
guy.
And I use the term in air quotes from the 28th district in Texas.
So of the hundreds of elected Democrats they could choose, they find the one guy who's willing to say Obama's Katrina. And then it becomes sides. You know, even Democrats are saying it now.
Yeah.
And that's why they exist. They exist as freaks of nature to which David Gregory can point and say, well, you see both sides. because that's my scam. That's my con. That's my bullshit. That's what I do for a living. And if Henry Cuellar didn't exist, he would have to be invented.
Invented, absolutely.
And you know what? David Gregory has lied, has invented, just pulled both sides' bullshit out of the air when there was no Cuellar available to make that quote, because that's what he does. And he is absolutely beyond accountability. There is no way to make David Gregory stop lying.
Because they've invested too much in him.
And because the consequences of the consequences of having to say publicly that the problems in this country are mostly caused by the conservative Republican Party losing its fucking mind, carry with it a moral cost, and now you have to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
No one in David Gregory's circle is willing to pay.
Right.
So
they're not willing to say racial animus. No. They're not willing to say that because that does not bring all these sponsors to the yard for them. Yeah. We're going to do some Bible bitch now.
Yeah.
Bible bitch. All right. A lot of people brought to my attention something that Pastor Louis Gohmert said this week.
The Reverend Dr. Louis Gohmert.
The Reverend Dr. Louis Gohmert.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of our more brilliant theologians. I don't know if you know about this.
He speaks for us all, Blue Gal. He talks to a small, stupid part of each person.
My mother, by the way, who celebrated her 75th birthday this week on my birthday. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for your kind birthday wishes, by the way. And today is my parents' 52nd wedding anniversary. So happy anniversary to Mom and Dad. But my mom doesn't have cable and she doesn't have internet. And even she brought up to me, have you heard of this guy, Louis Gohmert?
Yeah. Again, someone who you have to invent if he didn't exist.
Yeah. And she gets C-SPAN on her little TV in her little house in Pittsburgh. And she said, oh, my God, Louis Gohmert, who is this guy? It sort of broke through. Louis Gohmert broke through. Apparently, there are Muslims in Central America who are trying to invade America as well. Did you know about that from Louis Gohmert?
Oh yeah, they're in. They dress up as children and they coat themselves with Ebola virus.
Yep. And I went over to Louis Gohmert's Facebook page this week and found out that Lord God Jehovah wants all of Israel to belong to the Jews only. So you know that's a good thing to know. This is just. The politics of this and twisting it around patriarchal, syphilitic Christianism it's really ugly. But Gohmert attended a revival event called Celebrate America. There's so much wrong with that.
Yeah.
But
every word in that sentence doesn't belong there.
Yeah, says something wrong. But Louis Gohmert was there, and as it is a common practice, and I have no problem with this, where you will ask some layperson, and it might be someone who's prominent or not, to say a prayer or to say a few words at your meeting and, spontaneously say something nice about God or whatever. And it's a religious meeting, so go right ahead. But Gohmert was quoting a Texas personality named Bob Murphy. And he said, you know, I feel so bad for atheists. I do, Gohmert recalled. Think about it. No matter how smart they think they are, an atheist has to admit that he believes the equation, nobody plus nothing equals everything.
Uh-huh.
So there's a formula right there that proves that God exists.
Well, Louis Gohmert learned that working in the coal mines of Mars, you know.
They've doubled down on that, too, by the way. The guy who said that doubled down on that.
Yeah.
And that was last week. So I have some Bible verses here to take issue with Louis Gohmert. Several people wrote to me and said, I can't wait to hear what Bible Bitch has to say about this.
Well, I happen to know Bible Bitch personally, and she's about to drop a little wisdom on you. So,
This belief of feeling bad for atheists because they don't have God is treating truth and Christianity and God as if they're consumer products, and we own that. And so it's just a shame somebody doesn't have that brand of pizza.
It is.
You know?
It is.
They're missing out on so much because they don't have what we have. Yeah, okay. I wanted to read some verses from Matthew. Matthew 10, Jesus tells his 12 disciples as he sends them out to minister, don't begin by traveling to some far-off place to convert unbelievers, and don't try to be dramatic by tackling some public enemy. Go to the lost, confused people right here in the neighborhood. Tell them that the kingdom is here. Bring health to the sick, raise the dead, touch the untouchables, kick out the demons. You have been treated generously, so live generously.
Uh-huh.
And again, I'm reading from The Message, which is a modern translation of scripture. This is Matthew 23. The religion scholars and Pharisees are competent teachers in God's law. You won't go wrong in following their teachings on Moses. But be careful about following them. They talk a good line, but they don't live it. They don't take it into their hearts and live it out in their behavior. It's all spit and polished veneer. Instead of giving you God's law as food and drink by which you can banquet on God, they package it in bundles of rules, loading you down like pack animals. They seem to take pleasure in watching you stagger under these loads and wouldn't think of lifting a finger to help. Their lives are perpetual fashion shows. And, you know, the Faith and Freedom meeting is a perpetual Christianist fashion show. Embroidered prayer shawls one day and flowery prayers the next. They love to sit at the head table at church dinners, basking in the most prominent positions, preening in the radiance of public flattery. Don't let people do that to you, he says to his disciples. Put you on a pedestal like that. Do you want to stand out? Then step down. Be a servant. If you puff yourself up, you'll get the wind knocked out of you. But if you're content to simply be yourself, your life will count for plenty.
Poor atheists.
Those poor atheists, they don't have what we have. We're better than them, and we're more blessed than they are, and God loves us more, and it's just sad.
How about
a servant? How about be a servant to all mankind in your own neighborhood and tend to your own knitting?
This reminds me of, now that you've said it out loud, it reminds me a lot of well-known evangelical Christian Mark Twain.
Had very little time for evangelical.
Who talked about, you know, don't go, you know, about missionaries. Don't send them overseas. You know, it's well acknowledged that the Chinese are a sober and righteous and interesting people who are hardworking, etc. No, you know, come home, missionaries, and convert these Christians. They're the problem. They're the ones. These self-righteous pompous ones. They're the ones that are the problem. And all concerned about animals. You know, going to be left out.
Well, and this is something that Robert Reich brought up this week in relation to the immigration issues and the refugees, is when did Americans become so mean and ruthless? And I asked the same question this week about Christians. When did Christians get so goddamn mean? And it's tribalism. It's a belief of us and them. And we have what's good, and they're going to either take it away from us or they don't deserve it. And that is at the core of all of the ugliness that we're seeing in the world today. And again, starting from the little platform of love more for every hate, and then move outward into the world to where you can make a difference. That's what I want to do.
I have to believe a lot of it, or at least part of it, comes from the perception of scarcity.
Those
people are coming for your stuff, and they're going to take your stuff. They won't have any stuff. And those people don't deserve stuff. You deserve stuff because you're special and you were born in this country and God loves you most. And you're a freedom loving patriot. And as a mother and a patriot, you deserve everything you have because you worked really hard for it. Those people don't deserve anything because it is self-evidently true. They don't have your stuff and they were born in the wrong place. Ergo, they don't deserve your stuff.
Are they God's children or not?
They're coming for your stuff. And you know what? I have my own very skewed view of religion and the gospels so on and so forth. But I guarantee you, if you had asked any of the disciples or JC himself, you know, they're coming for your stuff. The answer would have been good.
We've got baskets full.
Here's more. I think I can get some more. I think I can give it all to you. In fact, would you like the shirt off my back? That'd be, you can have that too.
Yep.
The whole idea that you have created a political class in this country, conservative political class, who are terrified of people taking their stuff and who react as if they're constantly being ripped off and undermined and undercut and betrayed by those people being led by that Kenyan usurper is a way to turn to take Christianity and turn it inside out and make it into this vengeful, hateful siege mentality.
Yep.
And really, you turn them into Pharisees.
Well, and that's the funny part about it. We have a huge shout out to John Fugelsang this week.
Yeah.
Who was, you know, asked on Twitter about what would Jesus do. And can you provide any Bible verses where that is actually true, that Jesus felt generous toward people? I can't remember exactly.
I think it was the death penalty. I think it was
Jesus was against the death penalty. That's what it was.
But yeah. But there's no place in the Bible where Jesus actually says that. That's not really true. Yeah. You know?
And
can you cite scripture
with like 18 verses?
Yeah, bam, bam. It was brutal to watch because he just, you know.
And it was in Twitter time that he had these at his fingertips. Yeah. So when your mom's a nun and your dad's a former nun, marries a former monk and has a very smart kid.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be in the bloodstream right there.
It's on the bookshelf. Yeah.
In peach.
Uh-huh.
No, wait a minute. That's a summer fruit. I think I had a peach sangria with dinner last night. Is it delicious?
Yeah.
That was peach in.
In honor of the upcoming impeachment of Barack Obama.
In peach. Sarah Palin says it's time. The clocks are ticking. Now, what about, you had something to say earlier this week about when the lawsuit fails.
Yeah.
That is actually validation for those who want impeach.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's
that we just didn't go far enough in our fight for Barack. We tried to compromise.
Yeah. start with the predicate that the entire idea of the Congress suing the President of the United States over something as trivial as doing exactly what George Bush did. Is so ludicrous on the face of it that no court's going to hear it. Congress doesn't have any standing to even have such a lawsuit because Congress itself was never harmed. Mm-hmm. And the idea that during the discovery process, any competent attorney is going to have as part of the opening remarks that, you know, these guys have been fishing for reasons for years. This has been an open bill of particular.
This is the Clinton playbook. You've mentioned that many times.
Yeah, this has been, they began with the assumption that this guy has to be forced out of office, no matter what. Shut the government down, bankrupt the country, block whatever he does, impeach him. Mitch McConnell's whole raison d'etre for in 2012 was, we have to make Barack Obama a one-term president. Everything must be sacrificed to that position. So you begin with the idea that as of January 2009, the Republican Party has been obsessed with finding a way of getting rid of this guy because he is Clinton, but he's black. So his existence has driven them from I forget who sent along the quote from The Simpsons, ordinary villainy to cartoonish supervillainy. I mean, they've gone from just being run-of-the-mill Republican crazy to just completely demented, completely unhinged. And the only thing that keeps them tethered to the political process is David Gregory keeping this, well, the liberals are just as bad, Democrats are just as bad, both sides do it, which is patently untrue. So they've had years now of just steeping in this boiling, psychotic, paranoid rage. And it's entirely within an echo chamber. They only talk to each other now. They invent bizarre word salad conspiracy theories to link every horrible thing that's ever happened to them to Benghazi, to IRS, to whatever it is. So they've been looking for the right combination, the right twist of the Rubik's Cube to make it come up impeach. They want him gone. Because he was never elected properly. He was forced into office. Acorn stole the election along with the new Black Panther Party, yada, yada, yada. So that's the groundwork for all of this. So they've been looking for a way to fill in a blank on some piece of paper that would make him not president, be president anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been hunting for something. And the idea that they basically crowdsourced the lawsuit of the president of the United States said, what do you think we should sue him for? I don't know. What do you think we should sue him for? I don't know. Maybe this. That they did this openly and publicly.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not pissed off about any particular thing. We want him gone and we will gin up any fucking charge we can dream up that's the most plausible to get him to stop being president.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the opening statement of any attorney. These people are fucking nuts. These people are reckless, irresponsible, dangerous lunatics. And the fact that they were elected by reckless, dangerous, irresponsible lunatics is a sad commentary on the citizenship in this country. But what happens when the lawsuit fails? The lawsuit is a stopgap.
Yeah.
It's methadone maintenance for the impeachment crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And when it fails, that's when impeachment starts.
Right.
Because they've already talked about it for years. They've already been sniffing around. They already have elected officials talking about it. They already have senators talking about it, congressmen talking about it, their media talking about it. They're all sniffing around trying to find a way to make this thing click into place. And once, and if they win the Senate, it's game over.
Oh, I know.
It's absolutely game over. There's no reason to, that this was John Boehner's last attempt to keep the crazy party mollified until after the midterm election. Because once their lawsuit fails, there is no reason for them not to impeach the Kenyan usurper, because clearly he stole the election. And at that point, pretty much everything is out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least with Clinton, they had him on something. They had to do 6 years of witch hunts, and they had
Well, and that's it. Eventually, if you keep investigating, some mid-level bureaucrat will lie to protect their own skin, and then you've got cover up.
Yeah.
So.
And with Clinton, they had to swear him into a grand jury.
Yeah.
And then sandbag him.
Yep.
And catch him completely off guard in a situation that he never should have been in the first place. And then, of course, Ken Starr leaked the grand jury testimony.
Yes.
They played by their own set of rules. The problem with this scenario is this all became, in my opinion, completely inevitable in 2006. All the dominoes started falling in 2006. Because in 2006, the incoming Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, said that she was taking impeachment off the table.
Yeah, and she basically pardoned Dick Cheney
by
doing that.
She pardoned Cheney, she pardoned Bush, she pardoned the entire Bush administration, the entire Bush criminal regime was pardoned as, I think, an act of craven political calculation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was played as a sense of, look,
we're going to be the grown-ups.
We're going to be the grown-ups, and we're going to let you off the hook one more time. Sorry, that doomed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because, first of all, we already had an impeachment.
Yeah.
We had the impeachment of Bill Clinton. All Nancy Pelosi had to do was scratch off the word blowjob and write the word war crime, and she would have had the paperwork all done. She had all the predicate, all the arguments, all the arguments Republicans made for impeaching a commander-in-chief during a time of war, which was, in fact, true at the time. All the arguments Republicans made about the higher constitutional calling and the necessity. We don't want to do this, but the Constitution demands it. Those assholes were still in office. All you had to do to make the case for the impeachment of George Bush was, quote, Republicans back to Republicans. But Nancy Pelosi didn't do that. And the minute she decided to pardon, without exacting any punishment whatsoever, when she decided to pardon war criminals and torturers and liars and lunatics and say, you're all off the hook now. Let's all join hands down and let's just pretend that never happened. She set the precedent that, oh, there is now literally no consequences for anything we do. We can lie this country into war. We can get thousands of Americans killed, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi killed. We can bankrupt the treasury. We can lose an entire American city. We can lie about it the whole way through. We can set up secret prisons. We can torture people. And at the end of the day, there's no fucking consequences to it. So that's why Dick Cheney became inevitable. Because once it turned out that Republicans figured out that we can just make shit up, and when that fails, we'll make up more shit. And when that fails, hell, we'll make up more shit. Because no one's ever going to match what we said yesterday to what we said today and hold us to account. Liberals will. Those hate-filled, anti-Christian, anti-American traitors on the left, they'll be out there with their websites and their blogs holding up to the light what we said yesterday to what we said today and saying, look, this makes no sense at all. You cannot believe this on a Tuesday and this on a Thursday. And the answer is, yeah, we can. Nancy Pelosi said we could. We can do anything we want. Fuck you. So it became inevitable that the day would come when there would be a Democratic president, in this case, a black Democratic president, and their immediate response would be, oh, we got to impeach the guy.
Yeah.
Why? Because he's not one of us. And once it became okay to lie about your own past, to pretend that you never heard of George Bush, then it became inevitable that we would have a Tea Party or something like it. Because the Tea Party is entirely based on letting people off the hook for the shit they said last week. So they can go right back to being righteous and indignant and yelling and screaming about stuff, even though everything they're saying is the exact opposite of what they said a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy Pelosi was the one who set the precedent that the opposition party, the people who are allegedly the grown-ups in the room, are going to let you off the hook every time you do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, we were screwed.
Now we're to the point where if the evidence isn't available to Daryl Issa to put on a show trial. He just closes the committee meeting. He just says, well, we'll come back another day.
Yeah.
He had evidence this week. I wanted to point this out. And I'm not trying to get away from your indictment of Nancy Pelosi, but I thought this was really horrible. His Daryl Issa's committee, we all know about Daryl Issa's committee. This is not Lois Lerner that he called. This is Carolyn Lerner.
Uh-huh.
Carolyn Lerner is the director of the Office of Special Counsel. She is the special counsel. You know, not she's independent. She's not she doesn't work for the White House. She's an investigator.
Uh-huh.
And the Clinton counterpart was what's his name? The special counsel and
Ken Starr.
Ken Starr, right. Uh-huh. She's the Ken Starr. Okay. She's supposed to be investigating in a nonpartisan way what's going on.
Uh-huh.
Daryl Issa claimed that certain members of the White House might possibly be in violation of the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act prevents people who work for the government in the White House from doing political activity within the White House.
That's the Shachtman Decree in Chicago. For you Chicagoans out there, which I believe has since been suspended. But
So the idea was that, you know, perhaps some White House employees who should not be engaging in political activity were indeed engaging in political activity. So she was brought before the committee to report on the results of her investigation into this. She had prepared remarks presented to the committee.
And just as a bit of a reminder, this is the sort of thing that the Clinton administration got in trouble for doing. You have a cell phone that you use for fundraising.
Right.
You have a cell phone you use for your political calls, and you have to step outside of this room.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very weird kind of configuration where if you're making a call within these physical boundaries using this phone, it counts.
But if it's at 7 o'clock at night, you're calling a friend of yours and asking him to donate to the campaign,
then it
and he does it, you're all right. And you're using your own personal cell phone or a Democratic Party cell phone to do it, you're okay.
Yeah. So it's that sort of thing.
Anyway, this woman, her job is to enforce these prohibitions against federal employees engaging in political activity. I'm reading this from HuffPo.
Uh-huh.
So she had prepared remarks that I guess Daryl Issa got to read in advance.
Yes.
And just the end of it, the last sentence that HuffPo has up here is, it appears that the White House, and here's the quote, appears to be operating in a manner that is consistent with Hatch Act's restrictions.
Yeah.
So she didn't find anything.
She didn't find anything.
She investigated. We reviewed White House correspondence. It appears the White House adhered to OSC guidance in determining the scope of activity. End of story.
Yeah, that'll mess up your show trial.
She didn't get to say a single thing at the hearing.
No, of course not.
He pulled the plug on the committee. He declared the hearing was over. The two witnesses who came prepared to testify were dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
Elijah Cummings, the Democratic representative for this committee.
The Jiminy Cricket.
Jiminy Cricket. He did not know that the witnesses were not going to testify that day.
Uh-huh.
He was prepared to hear their testimony. And Daryl Issa said, we're going to dismiss these witnesses and adjourn.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Because they're not giving the evidence that I want to hear.
Right. We'll figure out some other way to hang these guys later. But this witch hunt didn't work out. But don't worry, there'll be future witch hunts. Right. We'll figure something out. We'll make something up.
And if, like you say, if the Republicans get the Senate this year, there is no
barrier. There's no bar.
Well,
there's
no supervisor in the nursery school.
Now, I believe you have to have
tell the kids not to set fire to the place.
I believe you have to have a 2/3 majority vote for removal in the Senate. That's how impeachment works. The House tries and the Senate convicts and removes.
And puts on trial. Right. Puts on the trial.
So unless they win 67 votes in the Senate, unless there's a 67 vote Republican majority in the Senate, it will never come to a
full impeachment. But that doesn't mean they can't waste a hell of a lot of time.
Well, there'll be an impeachment. I mean, impeachment just means the hearing part, and that'll happen. And then comes the shall we remove him from office part.
Yeah.
Because remember, the House found Clinton guilty.
Right,
And then recommended it to the Senate for essentially disposition. And the Senate said, yeah. And then along a fairly straight party line vote, it lost. But the... And the other person, I don't want to let Barack Obama off the hook. The other person who is squarely responsible for this situation is Barack Obama.
Yes.
Who from day one, he would not listen to liberals who were trying to warn him. There's a lunatic in the house with a big butcher knife who's trying to kill everything you believe in. Maybe
I'm going to make this purple America. It's not.
It's not a purple America.
You can make it purple America as long as you remove this philosophy from the House of Representatives.
You have to get rid of
Get rid of these people first.
You know, and
hey, Drift Class.
Yeah,
we're at an hour and 23.
I know.
And I can't believe it.
This was a podcast we didn't even want to do. This is the special
director. See what we do for you people. No, I'm not saying that.
This is the director's cut. You're getting the director's cut of this podcast. It's all new ending.
I think I might just throw this up and say, hey, we're done.
Deal with it. Well, I have a lot of coughing and sniffling in there, so.
Oh, I'll take care of that.
Okay.
Anyway, we're glad you listened to us, and we appreciate you so much.
Well, and we hope you'll have at least an hour's worth of liberal stuff to listen to on your way home from Netroots Nation.
Or any time this weekend.
Exactly.
And I guess we'll talk about Planet of the Apes spoilers next week.
Yeah, good movie.
Good movie. All right, each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Joey, and I have to tell you about Joey. The first picture I saw of Joey was in really bad shape. He had broken either a clavicle or a shoulder bone of some kind, and his front arm was all shaved off, and he had a cone around his head, and he had a brace holding his leg together. And so when Joey came up on the we don't say wait list, simply say line of ascension.
Yes.
I asked Joey's owner how Joey was doing, and did you have kind of a less gross picture of Joey? Joey's was in really bad shape.
Yeah.
And has had quite a year. But boy, they sent me a new picture of Joey, and Joey looks awesome. Oh, he's orange and happy and has all his fur and no cone around his head, and he's doing just great. So we love Joey, and we're so glad that Joey is fully on the mend. Welcome to Internet Kittydom, Joey. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, look, Al, the Internet Kitties are already sick of the summer reruns of The Adventures of Todd Akin and Daryl Issa.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Drift Glass.
Science Fiction University, once again, this week comes from our friend Dogface Herman.
Hello, Dogface Herman.
Yes. And these are TV shows or movies that have a comedy element to them. So mostly comedies here.
Okay.
All right, let's try them out. Number one.
The Phantom Menace was 18 months ago, Tim.
I know, Bilbo. Okay, it still hurts. No, that kid wanted a Jar Jar doll.
Kids like Jar Jar.
Why?
What about the Ewoks? Hey, they were rubbish. You don't complain about them.
Yeah, but Jar Jar Binks makes the Ewoks look like fucking Shaft.
I know that's Simon Pegg, but I have no idea what that is.
That is Simon Pegg, and it's a show called Spaced, which I guess is from the BBC. I do believe someone else has recommended Spaced to us.
Oh, I'm sure they have.
And I'll bet they're all on YouTube. Yeah, that is definitely Simon Pegg. Young Simon Pegg from 1999 to 2001, this show was on. All right, number two.
Doggo, you should study this. L-M-N-O-P Q. Just a few of their words, just in case.
Jenna has already told me a few words. Yes, no, bite me. That's all I need to know.
R-S. S. This girl is slow.
I'll just say I don't have any idea and let the chips fall where they may.
The show is called Farscape.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Actually, I have seen a handful of episodes of Farscape, which was not bad.
It ran a little longer, 1999 to 2003.
Yeah.
Number three is a movie, and I will tell you, it's a fairly well-known movie. It's not an obscure title, okay?
All right.
You said you watched me. You said you knew the rules.
I watched you very carefully. Red light, stop. Green light, go. Yellow light, go. Very fast.
Okay, that would be Jeff Bridges.
Yes.
In Starman.
He was nominated for an Oscar.
He was robbed.
He lost to F. Murray Abraham for Amadeus that year.
In another science fiction movie called Amadeus.
Amadeus.
not a comedy overall, but a funny scene.
That was a very funny scene. Yes, uh-huh. It was. All right. Number four is a TV show.
I know how crazy this is going to sound, but I want to be abducted by aliens.
Why? Whatever for?
I hate this town. I hate people. I just want to be taken away to some place where I don't have to worry about finding a job.
Oh, that's got to be The X-Files.
It's The X-Files.
Yeah, that's yeah. I was a big fan of The X-Files. I
want to be
snatched
up by aliens so I don't have to find a job.
Stupid town. This place sucks. Yeah, there was X-Files launched a lot of stuff. The people who spun off from that show, people who got directorial experience, the storylines, the callback to the Night Stalker.
Mm-hmm.
It knew where it came from. It knew where it was going. And it was a very, very good show all the way across the board.
All right. You and I watched this movie recently, so I'll be surprised if you don't get it, okay?
All right.
So here we go.
This is scientifically possible.
Oh, my God. Okay, Professor Hawking, tell me in your robot voice how this is scientifically possible.
All right, I write Stargate fan fiction, so I think I know what I'm talking about right now.
I seriously almost passed out. You're such a dork.
Oh, that's the time machine. No, that's Hot Tub Time Machine.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
That's not like, Rod Taylor at all.
That's a good movie. That's a good movie. It just is a funny movie. All right.
Although, speaking of Rod Taylor.
No, we don't have time for that.
Well, we just saw him in a movie where he was a Nazi.
We did?
Yeah.
What movie was that?
And James Garner was the Allied prisoner.
Oh, yes, 36 Hours.
Yeah, I had never seen that before. I had never seen that before.
And as you said, that is ripe for a remake. Someone needs to remake that movie because that's a good movie.
It was a damn fine movie. And I know they I don't know if they intended, probably did, lifted the plot of that, which I won't tell you what it is, but they lifted the plot for it to do at least two episodes of Mission Impossible. And one episode of Star Trek.
And probably an episode of Max Headroom, too. I'm just Orphan Black. And, I mean, this kind of theme is kind of borrowed for a lot of things. But, but this one's in black and white, and it's good. It really is good.
Oh, and
highly recommend it. 36 Hours.
It's a wonderful film, but this was the hot tub version of that movie.
Yeah.
Which was very, very fine in its own right.
All right, number six.
That's what they call Med Masters and Johnson's Clinic. Mad. Because I had visions of explorations in sexual areas undreamed of by lesser human beings. I was the first one to explain the connection between excessive masturbation and entering politics. It was I who first said that clitoral orgasm should not be only for women. Come, I want to show you my laboratory.
You recognize the voice, first of all?
Yeah, that's it's from the golden age of horror guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's not Lon Chaney. It's not Bela Lugosi. It's the Elder Carradine, I think.
It's the Elder Carradine. Huh. Yes, it is. Playing a crazy SOB.
But I have no idea what movie he's in.
It's Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Sex, but Was Afraid to Ask.
Oh, okay.
Woody Allen, 1972.
All right.
And Masters and Johnson said I was crazy. Yes, okay. In the haunted sex research house. Yes, okay. Number seven.
Why, he's mending it with his own hand.
See how he uses a spanner to tighten that nut.
Oh.
Tell us what this show is, which should be fairly easy. And then who is the person that they're talking about?
All right, well, that's Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Yes, it is.
That's so in my wheelhouse. And that's Bicycle Repairman.
It is Bicycle Repairman. Very good. This coming week, Sunday, and then repeated on Wednesday and Thursday, Monty Python is going to be broadcast live in movie theaters on Sunday, which we can't go because we have a church thing. But then repeated on, I think, Wednesday and Thursday. And I think we might try to go. I might take some of my birthday money and... take you to see Monty Python at the London O2 Senate Theater. All but Graham Chapman. It's almost live, I think they call it, because Graham Chapman is no longer alive. And, of course, I don't know if you saw, but in the middle of London, there was a gigantic dead parrot left in Monty Python's honor. Yeah. So
A giant blue parrot. Yeah.
Giant blue parrot. Number 8. You should be able to recognize this one. And actually, the person involved gives his name. So.
Correct. Your name?
Frank Zappa.
What is your function on this planet?
I am a musician.
All right, that's Saturday Night Live. That'll be a Conehead sketch. Unless I'm very much mistaken, is Frank Zappa.
That's Frank. He says he's Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
And what did Frank Zappa do to get himself banned from the show is the trivia question.
He was very – Frank Zappa never did any drugs, and he did not like it done around him, and he didn't want any part of it, and he was very clear about that fact, having had one of his studios burned to the ground in a famous song.
And he did not want particularly anyone on any kind of drugs around his instruments because that was expensive stuff, and he took his work seriously, and – apparently, the crew and cast of Saturday Night Live at that time had a casual attitude towards drug use.
Yes. Not quite mandatory, but awfully close.
Yeah. He was not invited back after that. Okay. Number 9, you will get right away.
Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in their midst.
Yeah, that's Gene Wilder putting on the Ritz.
Yeah.
Put on the Ritz! Yeah, I just, you know, come on.
And the name of the movie is?
Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein.
Very, 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 I mean, just, if you haven't seen it, just shame on you.
Shame on you. Young Frankenstein, Mel Brooks, 1974. And one of the things that Dogface Herman does for fun is race horses. And while he's cleaning out the stalls, comes up with ideas for Science Fiction University. He said to us, I am trying to get my horses to whinny when I say Frau Blücher. But they don't get the reference.
See?
Probably because you have to show them the movie.
You have to show them the movie and explain it to them in very small words so they will understand. I was having a conversation with a younger gentleman a couple of weeks ago and made a reference to Network, the movie. You know, Network. He had no idea what I was talking
Network.
About. You know, mad as hell, not going to take it. I had no idea what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. So there, Young Frankenstein is probably one of those points of overlap where you can gauge how far out of touch with this generation you are by gently probing. Have you ever seen Young Frankenstein? No.
But
have
you ever seen? It's funny. Maybe it's because I'm a history major and therefore the past kind of fascinates me. But you took me out to dinner last night for my birthday.
I did.
There was a man singing old Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin songs, and I could sing along with all of them.
Yes.
And that's not my generation. Nope. You know, that's from way before my time. So I think there's some things that just require culturally literate people to know. You know, you're just required to know these things. And I'm sorry, but Young Frankenstein is one of those things. If you're a culturally literate person,
you got to know.
You got to know it.
If you don't, Blazing Saddles, you got to know
it. You got to know it. All right.
I've taken us off the rails, so I apologize.
Okay. Last one. This is Dogface Herman's favorite line from the movie, and he wants to know what your favorite line from this movie is. Let me play it.
Your guess is as good as mine, Larry. The one thing, sure. Inspector Clay's dead, murdered, and somebody's responsible.
That's Plan 9 from Outer Space.
That's Plan 9 from Outer Space.
What else could it be?
What's your favorite line from Plan 9 from Outer Space?
Oh, it's gotta be, your stupid mind, stupid, stupid. Because it just goes with anything. It's like a little black dress. It goes with anything.
It goes with anything.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dogfaced Herman. Whenever we're not talking about TV or music or something else, we do a Science Fiction University, and we love doing them. So,
and as much as I love doing top 10 lists or 10 lists or whatever, where I can look either knowledgeable or incredibly ill-informed, we also like the single point question, which is talk more about this.
Yeah.
This aspect or this.
If you have
attribute.
A question about that, or if you want to ask Driftglass, the science fiction expert, you know, what did Asimov really mean by this? Yeah. Go ahead.
Don't ask me about camera placements in movies. cannot help you with that.
And if you don't want Driftglass to read your question in advance, send it to me at mrs.driftglass at gmail.com.
If I see something,
he doesn't get to see that in advance.
If I see something marked Science Fiction University or a question that's sent to both of us, I avert my eyes. I do
a little bit
because this is fun for me to do. I'm a little allergic today. I'm nursing my allergies along a little bit today.
Because our cat rubbed her face in your head.
And my face on my face.
She put her face on your face.
So I'm a little bit sneezy, but I genuinely enjoy doing these. So that's please keep sending them. Yeah. Keep them coming.
And thank you very much. Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.